the corkscrew.
You want to talk about it?
There's nothing to talk about. Shorty does dumb things all the time. Mark my words, in 3 months, he'll be back here needing money.
Maybe this is not about Shorty coming back. Maybe this is about Shorty not coming back.
Manny.
What she's saying is, deep down, you're afraid Shorty's going to love Costa Rica and you'll lose your best friend forever.
That's what you do. You push people away so when they leave, it doesn't hurt that much.
I need a drink.
Jay, you have to make this right with Shorty. You have to tell him how you feel. He has been a great compadre with you for many years. Besides, who else is going to laugh at your jokes?
Lots of people laugh at my jokes.
Name one person that doesn't work for you.
When Mitchell was born, he was a month premature, so it was touch and go there for a while. It's 2 a.m. I walk out into the hospital waiting room to get some air, and there's Shorty. He'd been sitting there for 6 hours and refused to leave for the next 2 days. That's where we got Mitchell's middle name, not Shorty. Vincent. Gloria, I'm going for a drive.
Say hi to Shorty for me.
I'm not talking to you.
Hey. I was just coming to see you.
I left my jacket.
Oh, there it is. Come on. Sure, you know that stuff I said.
Yeah, I get it.
We're good, huh?
Under the bridge. All right, I'll see you.
Shorty, wait. I need to say something to you.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for all the great times we've had.
Yeah, we had a lot of laughs.
Yeah. And you should know that you're my best friend, you know? Probably the best friend I'm ever gonna have.
Gee, I mean, what are you doing to me?
This is hard for me. I'm just trying to tell you how I feel.
Well, I'm gonna tell you how I feel. I admire the hell out of you, Jay. I always tell Darlene, that's a real guy. Self-made, stand-up, kind of guy you want to be in a foxhole with.
I'm not all that.
Well, it sounds like I've been in a foxhole.
I'm gonna miss you, Vincent.
I'm gonna miss you, too.
I love you.
I love you, too, Jay Bird.
I really, really do.
If I'm being honest, this is a little girlier than I thought.
All right, you know, great, great scene from one of America's favorite TV shows. And you know what I love about that scene is there's two men who are risking, friendship with one another right there. I mean, they're risking being mistaken. They're kind of, you know, trying to figure out what it looks like and how to say how they feel and trying to get by their preferences and what they prefer and for the best interest of their friend. And yet, they're willing to be mistaken. They're willing to even put themselves out there for the sake of maybe even being misunderstood, for the sake of building into the friendship. And there's a defining moment right there. And in the series, Friends with Benefits, we've been looking at, again, as Eric said, going beyond the casual relationships, you know, moving to those deeper relationships, somebody who I can talk about anything and everything with at any time, because those kinds of friends are rare. And in week number one, we looked at how if that's going to happen, we have to be vulnerable, have to be willing to be vulnerable with our friends. And then in week number two, we looked at this idea of encouragement. You know, as friends, how do we be the kind of friend that puts courage, maybe pulls things out of our friends, maybe we see things in our friends that maybe they don't even see in and of themselves, and pull them up and empower them to maybe be the person God's created them to be. And then last week, of course, we looked at this idea of laying down your life for your friends, what it looks like to sacrifice for your friendship. And today, in this final week, I want to kind of talk about this through line that I see through these first three choices that we've looked like. The choice it looked at, the choice to be vulnerable, the choice to encourage or to put courage in one another, and the choice to lay down our lives for our friends. And so we're going to look at that today. Before we do that, my name's Kurt, by the way. If I haven't met you, it's great to meet you here this morning. Really excited that you're with us here at Cross Point. And before we do anything else, let's just pray and ask God to invite us into this moment. God, we thank you that we can come into a place like this, into a dark room, and we can get pushed. God, I thank you that I can get pushed and challenged around things like friendship and what it looks like from your perspective. And I just pray today, God, that you would move us to a new place, that we'd be stimulated by the things we look at to take our friendships to the next level, through being willing to risk and be the kind of friends that risk for the sake of going deeper in our relationships. And so, God, I pray that you would just help us to do that today. Pray these things in your name and according to your character, the person of Jesus. Amen. Well, you know, the through line that I see through these first three choices being vulnerable, encouragement, and sacrifice is this. And that is that friends with benefits take risks in defining moments. You know, every friendship has that defining moment. It has that moment where, you know, you make or break the friendship. It has that moment where you're willing to put yourself on the line or you're willing to maybe communicate how you feel in a way that you never have before that actually elevates that relationship and takes it to a new place. Or there are defining moments in friendships where we actually don't do those things, and that becomes a defining moment, and that relationship begins to erode away. And I see this over and over again. In fact, I've had it happen over and over again in my life. Moments where I've taken advantage of those moments, times where I've missed those moments, those defining moments to actually take the relationship, take the friendship to a deeper place. One of the things I love about the life of Jesus is that even though he was the Son of God, we still see him needing people. We still, as we look at his life, we see him leaning on people. We see him, you know, gathering, you know, a close group, knit group of friends around him and leaning into their lives. And we see that all throughout the New Testament. In fact, we see Jesus gathers this group of like 72 people, and he builds into this group of 72, and he sends them out into, you know, the surrounding community and says, hey, do the things I've been doing. I want you to care for people. I want you to teach people. I want you to show people what the kingdom of God looks like. And then we see him with this smaller team, in this smaller team context. And this is with a group of 12. And it's with these 12 disciples as they're referred to. And in this group of 12, Jesus is much more intentional as he teaches and as he trains and basically teaches these 12 men to replicate the very things that he was on this earth to do. And then we even see within this 12 that Jesus has some friends with real benefits. We see that he has this inner circle of three, this group of three friends, Peter, James, and John. And one of the things we see through these friends is that we see certain windows into Jesus' life that otherwise we wouldn't see. In fact, there's certain things we know about Jesus that we only get the glimpse, a small little picture of these things because of the things Peter, James, and John report in the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Gospels. And so we see these little snippets of this in-depth, deep relationship, this community that Jesus shares in this circle of four. And so the first instance that we see this is in Matthew chapter 4. And here's what it says. Here's how the engagement goes, where Jesus kind of initiates this friendship. It says, as Jesus was walking along the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and they followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen this portrayed in a movie or not, or a TV show. You know, there's a new movie called The Son of God coming out here in a month or so. And it's always kind of interesting. You know, it's one of the classic scenes where, you know, in the movies about Jesus, they depict how Jesus calls the disciples. And I don't know, whenever I see that, I think, man, that's pretty weird. It's actually a little bit disturbing as you, like, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just wait till you see a movie about this. You know, I mean, it's like the zombie Jesus scene, right? I mean, it's like these men are out fishing. They're throwing their nets over the side of their boat. They're just doing what they do every day. They're doing their livelihood. They're fishing. That's how they put food on their table. And all of a sudden, they kind of see the embodiment of Jesus walking along the shore, actually kind of floating around the shore. Jesus' head never moves in the movies. He's always like, ooh. You know, he just kind of like floats. And all of a sudden, he ends up at the edge of the shore, and he never says anything, all right? He just looks. He gazes, and he reaches, and he does this. And they're like zombies. They just like drop their nets, and they just start following. I mean, it's like a freaky moment, all right? I mean, I look at that, I'm like, man, that is not right, all right? I mean, I don't think it happened. In fact, we know from history the way that this thing played out a little bit because Jesus was a rabbi. And so rabbis had gone through a bunch of training. They were trained, and everybody started in rabbi school. Everybody went through Hebrew school. And at some point along the way, you know, only the best of the best made it to the next phase. And so Jesus is one of the best of the best. And he continued through until he became a rabbi. And a rabbi would invite, you know, young men. I mean, we're not talking old grown 40-year-old Irish men, you know, like PJ, you know, up here. I mean, with the big bushy beards. We're talking like young men, all right? Young men that, you know, he would invite them, they would invite them to come be an apprentice under them, all right? And so, you know, oftentimes these were the flunk outs from Hebrew school, all right? At some point, you know, all kids start in Hebrew day school, and before long, you know, the teacher would go to their parents and say, well, you know, little John and Peter, man, they're not the best of the best, so they're going to be better off if they take up fishing with the family business. You know, so they go, and that's what they do. And so Jesus sees them, and he knows them. Likely, he's at least had some contact with them along the way. It's not like a random connection here. You know, there's some kind of relationship, but irregardless of that, this is a defining moment right here. All right, because what Jesus is doing is he's risking initiating, and that's what friends with benefits do. Friends with benefits risk initiating. All right, there's always a defining moment in a friendship where we decide, hey, this is one of those moments where I'm going to take a risk to be misunderstood. I'm going to take a risk. And with Jesus, he sees these guys. He knows them at some level, you know, even if it's surface level. And he says, hey, I need you. I'm doing something here in this world. And I need a group of team of people to help me. And I need you. He doesn't say, hey, look at what I'm doing. If you want to join me, you can. He doesn't do it, you know, kind of the like keep you at arm's length in case they reject me. He invites you. He says, I need you on my team. He risks with them. I mean, these aren't the best of the best. He's like the B team right here. He takes the risk, and they risk as well, right? They're out doing their livelihood. They're fishing. They're putting food on the table for their families, and yet they receive this invitation, and they initiate this friendship with Jesus that begins to go to a deeper level. I remember when we first moved to Fishers. I was in kind of this high networking mode, which I enjoy networking and connecting with people, but I was in this high, like, ultra networking mode trying to get people to join our launch team, and I was especially looking for men that I could connect with. I mean, especially men that have a D on the DISC profile, high dominance, high D, driven, entrepreneurial guy. I just love to, you know, connect with those kinds of people. And so I kind of look back at that as affectionately as my, like, man dating season, you know, where I'm, like, looking for men I could, like, you know, hang out with. And so it's weird because it's not all that different. Looking back, it wasn't all that different than, like, when I would, like, try to get a date with a woman, right? I mean, it kind of, like, resembled it in a weird way. For instance, one of the guys I met was a guy I met through mutual friends that came to Cross Point. And it's a guy named Jason Hipskin. And Jason, he worked for a startup company, and they were always on like a six-month fuse, you know, like their investors would pour, you know, $1 million into them, and they'd see if they could get this technology thing up and off the ground, and if not, then they didn't know if he was going to have a job 6 months later, and he was driven by that, and always not knowing, you know, if the paycheck was coming, but we're going to conquer the world and change it. I mean, I love, you know, hanging out with people like that, and so somewhere along the way, you know, a few months after I'd met him, we were talking out here in the foyer, right outside the front doors, and I kind of reintroduced, said, hey, you know, Jason, my name's Kurt. And he's like, hey, I'm Jason. And he gave me his business card. All right. He's like, man, we ought to connect sometime. I'm like, oh, that'd be great. So I put the card in my pocket and I go home that afternoon and I'm like, man, I had to call him. Then I'm like, man, I can't call him today. He's going to think I'm desperate. All right. I mean, if I call him today, he's going to think, man, Kurt really is looking for a friend. You know, so I like put it down for a few days. And, you know, a few days later, I picked it up and I got my phone. I dial 9 numbers and I hang up. I get my phone out again, I dial 9 numbers, and I hang up again. I mean, it's just like a girl, right? I mean, I'm like getting the nerve up to like call him, and finally I dial 9 numbers. I'm like, hey, Jason, you know, this is Kurt, and remember we talked at Cross Point, talked about getting together? He's like, oh yeah, let's do that. I'm like, let's, you want to hang out? Let's grab coffee or something. So we, you know, arranged to meet like up at Starbucks at 69 at 7 in the morning or something before work one day. And we're sitting there talking. It was just cool. I mean, I loved Jace, the friendship I developed with Jace. I mean, we found out we had all these things in common. I mean, totally different industries, but, you know, the way we were driven and engaged fully with our families and life and work. And, you know, it was just a great start of a great friendship. And, you know, like an hour or so later, we both had to get to work. So we walked out, and like he's parked here and I'm parked here. We're standing out there kicking the dirt. I'm like, well, Jason, that was really fun, you know? And, I'm like, you know, you want to go out again sometime? And, you know, I mean, it was like, it's just like dating a girl. I mean, it was crazy how you know, how similar they are. And, but I tell you what, we formed a great friendship with Jason and Dina. I mean, I got friends with Jason and Julie and I with Dina. And, you know, and found out their son Augie had this precancerous condition that they were trying to find a treatment for. And out of that, their family formed this nonprofit called Comfort Foods that, you know, basically took food, meals down to Riley Hospital for other families who were in treatment at Riley Hospital and just giving them a home-cooked meal, you know, when they were down there for treatment. And Crosspoint got behind that. And we, for, you know, a couple years, helped send meals down there. And, you know, we saw Jason and Dina on vacations. We just became really good friends. They moved to Cincinnati a few years ago. But when we see them, which we do periodically, it's just like old times. I mean, you just pick up where you left off. And here's the thing. It all began because I took a risk. Because I was willing to pick up that phone and hang it up and pick it up and hang it up. And then finally, you know, make the call, say, hey, let's connect. And you know, and sometimes we like to keep people at an arm's length, right? Because when they're at arm's length, there's no sense of rejection. There's no sense of, oh, man, if it doesn't work out, you know, I'm not hurt. You know, it's when we take the risk. And, you know, the thing I love about what Jesus models for us is Jesus models that he needs people. Right, these three guys, Peter, James, and John, this inner circle, you know, these guys, there was a level of engagement that he had with them that he didn't have with anyone else. In fact, one of the times we see this is about 24 hours before Jesus goes to the cross. And he's with the 12. And Jesus knew at this point what was coming. All right, he knew he was going to be arrested soon. He knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to die by crucifixion, which still to this day is one of those painful forms of death. He knew the torture he was going to go through. And there are things that we get glimpses of in those few moments, that day before that event took place, that we only see because of this friendship that he has with Peter, James, and John. In fact, here's one of the looks at it in the book of Mark, verse 32. It says, they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to the disciples, this was to the 12, the larger group of 12. He said, sit here while I pray. And then look what he says to his inner circle, these three. It says he took Peter, James, and John along with him. So they went a little further, a little deeper into the garden. And it says, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. This is Jesus said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. He said to them, stay here and keep watch. I mean, this is one of the most emotionally raw moments that we ever see of Jesus. And we see it with these three tight inner friends. I mean, Jesus is bared like wide open right here. And that's what friends with benefits do. Friends with benefits, they go to a level of growth where they're willing to risk brutal honesty. The second thing that friends with benefits do in the risky moment is they risk honesty. They risk honesty. See, these guys, they know who Jesus is at this point. They know what he's there to do. They know the incredible call on his life. They know that, you know, he's got this thing in front of him. He risks letting them see him deeply troubled. You know, I don't know if you remember as a kid. As a kid, man, I was like always about my scars. You know, I was always sharing my scars. I'm like, hey, look at this scar right here. Can you believe what happened? It must have passed it down. My son's the same way, man. I don't know if you guys are that way, but, you know, have you ever noticed as adults we become different on that? As adults, we, you know, I don't know if we become more sophisticated or what, but we don't let people see our scars as frequently. Maybe it's because they're a little deeper than when we were kids. Maybe it's just because we don't want people to see into that part of our lives. You see, Jesus right here, he risks honesty. He's willing to say, hey, look, I'm deeply troubled. Listen, there's some things that are going to happen. I'm willing to let you see how bothered I am, the inner part of who I really am. And honestly, those friends, one of the things he said to them, he said, I just want you to come and be here with me. I'm facing some difficult stuff. Can you come just sit with me? I'll tell you what, I have a friend I want you to meet today that knows what it's like to sit there and be a friend in difficult moments. So help me welcome to the platform, Randy Lloyd. Come on up here, Randy. Good to see you, buddy. Randy and I actually go way back, about 18 years. Randy was in the first church that I was on staff at, and this makes me feel really old, but his kids were in our youth student ministry. And they're all married and have kids now. And if I'm going to be really bluntly honest with you, I think I had a man crush on Randy, okay? He was one of those guys that I'm like, man, I would love to know this guy. And, you know, he and his wife Joyce started coming to Crosspoint a little over a year ago, a year and a half ago. And he's connected. We've got connected through our men's group that meets over lunch on Wednesdays. And I tell you what, there's just, I've seen some things in Randy, and it reminded me of the things I loved about him when we used to see each other more frequently a number of years ago. And that is that he pours himself into his friendships. And through our men's group this last fall, there was one of your friends going through some pretty difficult things. And just hearing Randy talk about the way, as a friend, he was coming alongside. He wasn't bragging. He's just saying, man, this is what I did for my friends. And before we talk about that, take us back to how you met David and Beth, all right? Because I know that was a while back, but how did you guys get connected initially, that surface level?
Well, it happened at a we went to a birthday party, and they were there, and I met Dave, and we stood in one corner and talked all night long. Mm-hmm. And when we got home, I told Joy, I said, I've met a new friend. Mm-hmm. And, that way she had known them in high school, but I was just getting to know some new friends in that area. And I figured Dave was my first new friend. Well, awesome. About 2 days later, we're at a university club meeting where they bring in professional football players or whoever to speak. And so it's the first time I've ever gone. I'm standing there, and I know nobody. I mean, I'm looking around, and there's no familiar faces. The door opens up, and Dave walks in. I'm going, oh, yes. Here comes a friend.
We've all been there, right? Yeah. We're looking for somebody.
Well, I'm standing there, and I got a big grin on my face, and here he comes. He's kind of walking at me, and then he just kind of goes like that. And walks right on by me, and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, he didn't like me after all. And I realized later that he was bashful at beginning like that, and so we got together that night and sat at the same table and laughed and talked, and so I had a friend.
Yeah, and that was like 30, 35 years ago. So, 35 years. So a lot of time has passed. We're going to fast forward to the last 3 or 4 months now. And you guys are still friends. A lot of defining moments. One of the things I've noticed about defining moments in friendships is they never end. You might have one, and there's always a next defining moment that takes that relationship to a new place. And so this past, within the past year, Beth comes down with cancer. And this last fall, realizing that she's not going to make it. I mean, that's, right. You begin realizing that. Take us through just some of the ways as a friend you walked alongside them.
Well, we were visiting, and it was the... It ended up being the very last week, the last few days, and Beth was at home in the bed, and we were all talking to her, and people left the room, and it ended up being me the only one in the room, and I said, we love you, Beth, and she said, I know, and I love you too, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, 35 years as a friend, and right at that point, all I can say is, we love you. And I'm thinking, some of the hardest people to talk to or say something to are the people you love the most. Your mom's, dad's, best friends, whatever. And so I looked at Beth and I said, Beth, I tell you I love you, but let me tell you why I love you. And I got to tell her the things that I love about her and her friendship and her being such a great friend to my wife, Joy, and being her confidant that I could never, ever express. But I got to tell her that, and it was a great feeling.
Yeah. And when he told this, he was telling this to a group of men sitting at Houlihan's one day, and I'm just sitting there thinking, man, how many men, what a great picture of what it means for a man to not, we say, oh, man, I love you, we do the pat, and of course this is with a woman, but to say, let me tell you why I love you. And I thought, that's what I love about Randy. You talk about a great friend. And you can probably count on your hands, like I can, the times where I've bailed on a friendship or I've not done it well. But it doesn't stop. I mean, there's always defining moments. In fact, when I ask Randy, I put these asks out and see if people come and share with me, these little glimpses that, I see in their lives. And I sent something to Randy this week, and he didn't respond for like a day. And I'm thinking, oh, he didn't want to come up here and share it with me. but you just hadn't seen it. But talk a little bit about when you got that email, because that's kind of a unique point, too.
Well, I ended up looking at the email on Friday, and I realized that it had been sent on Thursday. The time was 12:09. And I started thinking, 12:09, what was I doing? Why didn't I see this email? Well, the reason was that Thursday, I was having lunch with Dave.
David, Beth's wife.
Yes.
Your Beth's husband.
And Beth's husband, Dave. And we had that lunch, and I was sitting there, and But going back when I saw the time of the email, I'm thinking, and then I read Kurt's email about sharing, I'm thinking, you know, this all happened right at the time that I was with Dave. But this lunch, it was a little different. And I looked at Dave and I said, I'm going to say something that I normally may not say. And I really didn't know how he was going to accept this. But I told him, I said, I don't know the pain that you've gone through. I can't say I know that. And I don't want to know it. But I know that in the near future, you're thinking about your life now, and you have an opportunity. You have the opportunity to have a great life from this point on. But the one thing I want to tell you is that you need to have a foundation on starting this new life. You need to ask God to guide and direct you, to lead you in this manner. Build this foundation that is strong, that you can stand on, and your life can start anew and be great. And I put that out there nervously, and he reached across the table and took my arm and said, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. It was worth it.
Yeah. Friends, this is a great picture right here of what it means to be a friend. Thanks, Randy. Let's thank Randy. Buddy. And it's hard. You know, as I sat in this men's group and Randy in real time was walking down this path that eventually led to Beth's passing, and I heard him talk about what it means, to, you know, just the way he's walked along as a friend, I thought, you know, I hope I'm a friend like that. And I hope that that's the kind of friend I can be. And not just to be there, but to be able to say those things and to, you know, what do you say in those moments? So thank you, Randy, for sharing that great picture with us. So friends with benefits, they risk initiating. Friends with benefits risk honesty. The third thing, and this third one, man, this one kind of comes with a Surgeon General's warning on it, all right? I mean, this one's a little bit risky right here, all right? But that's it. Friends with benefits risk conflict, right? They risk conflict. And I don't know what your experience with conflict has been. It's the number one killer of friendships is conflict. And you know, more people, including myself, have lost a friendship because of conflict. And not because of conflict, but because it wasn't handled or it wasn't handled well. And you know, this becomes a powerful, powerful defining moment when conflict comes up in a friendship. And this happened with Jesus too. In fact, Jesus and Peter, I mean, Jesus is having these moments with these 12 close friends, these three close friends, and one of those moments is Jesus is hanging around, you know, they're just sitting talking, and Jesus says to his friends, he's like, hey, you know, who do people say that I am, you know? And they're like, what do you mean, Jesus? He's like, well, what's the word on the street? You know, what are people saying about me? And the disciples are like him hauling around, they're like, well, you know, some people say you're like John the Baptist, and other people think you're like the prophet Elijah, and he's like, Elijah, great, like a ghost? I mean, think I'm not real? I mean, what is this? And you know, and they're like, no, people think you're a prophet, or some people think you're a great teacher. And he looks at him, and he's like, but who do you say that I am? And Peter, one of the inner three, one of the close inner three to Jesus, stands up, and I have to think, he's like, Jesus, man, I don't know. This may be way off base, but he says, you know, I believe you are the living Son of God. He said, I believe that you are the Messiah, the one who's been prophesied about, who we've been waiting on. And you can just see Jesus on the pages there smiling, and he begins to affirm Peter. He begins to say, Peter, understand what you just said did not come from flesh and bones. What you said came only from the Father. And he goes on, he says, Peter, in fact, what God's doing in you, what God's revealing to you, the fact that you see that and you have the wisdom to identify that, he says, Peter, on you, on Peter, on Petrus, on this rock, on the foundation of what you just said, I will build my kingdom and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. Talk about a moment, right? I mean, Peter's like, woo! You know, he's like, man, gee, I got it. Jesus is affirming me. And, you know, his head's probably like this big at the moment. And then immediately, like right out of that, right off that moment, Jesus says, and here's what's going to happen next. He says, the authorities, they're not going to like this. And he says that before long, I'm going to be arrested. And I'm going to be tried for an unjust trial for crimes that I didn't commit. In fact, it's for the crimes you and I committed. He said, I'm going to go to a cross. I'm going to be crucified. But he said, I'm going to die a horrible death, but all of that has to take place to fulfill what the prophecy said was going to happen. Now, Peter's like sitting there, and you can almost like see him. He's kind of like, but Jesus, come on, Jesus, I'm your boy right here. I mean, I told you, you know, I'm the rock, man. I got your back. I've got you, Jesus. None of that's going to happen to you. And, you know, Jesus, you would think Jesus might say something like, you know, Peter, man, I know you got my back and you are my boy and I appreciate you, you know, identifying this a few moments ago. But and he says something to Peter, but it's not that. Here's what he says to Peter. Get behind me, Satan. That's what he says to Peter. He says, get behind me. Now, those are fighting words right there, right? I mean, we're talking conflict right here all of a sudden. Because Peter, even though he had that great moment, all of a sudden he's like, no. It's not going to be that way. And you see, it's one of those things that, you know, any great moment of friendship, if you have a great moment in friendship, you're bound to have a moment of conflict. And this is where, like, the Mike Tyson, you know, principle of conflict comes into play for me. I don't know if you know the Mike Tyson principle of conflict. Remember Mike Tyson? Mike Tyson, big heavyweight champion, you know. Remember when he lost to Buster Douglas? Buster Douglas, nobody knew who Buster Douglas was, right? He's this guy comes into the ring, and Mike Tyson's a champion of the world, and all of a sudden, Mike Tyson gets, like, knocked out, and everybody's shocked and stunned, and, you know, and finally he gets up off the mat, and the ringside announcer goes over to Mike Tyson. He's like, Mike, what happened? Didn't you have a plan? What was your strategy? And Mike Tyson's, like, shell-shocked, right? And in a moment of clarity, he says, well, man, everybody's got a plan until somebody punches you in the mouth. Remember that moment? That was a great moment. Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. That's the Mike Tyson principle of friendship there, right? I mean, it does. If you've got a great friendship, let me tell you what, any great friendship, there will be a moment where you get punched in the mouth. Right? There is going to be a moment where somebody says something that's hurtful, where there's some kind of conflict that all of a sudden seems like there's a rift between you and this close friend. And the question, the defining moment, is whether we resolve it and resolve it well. In fact, there's a verse that talks about this in Matthew chapter 18. It says this. It says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault. And here's the key phrase right here. Just between the two of you. So what this is saying, if somebody kind of offends you or somebody says something that's hurtful to you or somebody says something that you're just like, man, I'm not sure how to take that. What this says right here is that you're to go directly to them and say, you know, man, listen, I know we were talking and when you said this thing, man, I don't know if it was meant this way, but man, that really hurt. I just felt like I needed to tell you that. Or, you know, when you interfered in this thing here, I think you were trying to be helpful. I don't know, but it wasn't helpful. And I just want to let you know that. All right, see, what happens so many times is we instead do what I call the Bermuda Triangle of friendship, right? Where we go to our friend and we're like, can you believe what they said? Or you know, the Christian way of doing that is we're like, hey, will you pray for me and so? Do you know what they said to me? Will you pray for that? You know, I mean, this is how we do it right here, right? And so, and as soon as we do that, that friendship begins to erode because, as Jesus says, we don't go to that person just between the two of us. Right, there's a defining moment right there. I mean, I love Matthew 18. Listen, I love Matthew 18 because, you know, when this basically says when I offend somebody, they're going to come and tell me that I offended them because I have this disease. I don't know if you have this disease. I have this disease called the foot and mouth disease, and I'm regular like saying things and putting my foot in my mouth, and this basically kind of says, hey, you know, if I've said something in the wrong to somebody, it's their responsibility to come and let me know. Like I, you know, like I'm kind of free and clear. I can say whatever I want, and then oh, that hurts you? Okay, well I'll apologize to that. You know, it should all be good if that was the only place Jesus talked about this, but unfortunately, he talks about it again. He talks about in Matthew chapter 5 where he says this. He says, therefore, this is what therefore means. Therefore means this is for everybody who has foot and mouth disease, all right, including myself. He says, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, remember that your sister or brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. And what Jesus is saying is, you know, sometimes we overstep our boundary. Sometimes we say things that are hurtful. We don't mean to. But, you know, we have that moment where, like, you know, the nonverbal language I got in that conversation almost communicated that that was kind of hurtful to them. I need to go back and say, you know, when we were talking about this, I don't know if you took it this way, but when I said this, I didn't mean it to be hurtful. I really wanted it to be helpful. But, I mean, if I hurt you, I just want you to know that I'm sorry. I don't want there to be a rift between us. Right, see, the Bible's really clear. When you're in deep friendship, you will have conflict. The question, the defining moment, is how do you resolve that? Do we just walk away and kind of let the friendship erode, or do we use that as a defining moment that actually strengthens and takes that relationship? Because there's incredible fruit on the other side. Now, I don't know where this lands for all of us today. Right? I mean, I'd venture to say that there's probably a friend that's come to our mind this morning that's maybe been on the forefront, maybe somebody that we've had a conflict with recently, or somebody that, man, you know, that's been there, and I've been going through some rough stuff, but I've just not been willing to be brutally honest, risk being honest, and let them really see how much I'm struggling. Or maybe it's just a friend that, you know, you needs to go to a different place, but you've kept them at arm's length. So, you know, we look at this and we think, man, Kurt, that sounds like a lot of work. Well, let me assure you, it is. All right, I mean, it is. It's hard work. This takes a lot of energy, but it's worth it. It's worth it. So take out your connection cards, and on the back side are some next steps. And, you know, these next steps really go along with some of the things we talked about today. And so, you know, I'm just going to trust that maybe God's nudged you. Maybe God's put a friend on your heart or somebody. And these are critical today. I mean, we give you next steps every week, and they're important. But, you know, today, these are ones that have to do with people who are closest in our lives. These aren't those people that are acquaintances. We're really talking about our friends that are the people that we would say are our closest, bestest friends. All right, so, you know, maybe there's somebody you just need to spend some time with. Maybe, as Eric said earlier, you know, somebody you just need to drop an email and say, you know, man, we haven't talked for a while. I benefit from that. Let's connect. Or maybe, you know, there's some stuff going on in your life and you've not let anybody into that circle, and you need to let somebody see your scars or just see that, man, I'm struggling and I want to invite you in to that. Or the conflict thing. I mean, that's never fun, but maybe there's some conflict, and this is going to be a defining moment for you of how you resolve this. And can't I resolve it well? Or maybe, you know, there might be some of us who have just gone through this series and, you know, we've been checking Jesus out. We've been here, been talking about Jesus as our friend, but we've never taken that step. And as Randy said to his close friend, you know, sometimes it's hardest to talk about the things that mean the most with the people who are closest to us. And maybe today is a day where you just say, you know, I need to begin a friendship with Jesus. I mean, you know, I didn't realize that he took all my sin and all I have to do is receive his grace, and that's how I begin relationship. But if that's where you are, that's all you have to do. Just say, Jesus, that's what I want to do. Mark that on the card. We want to pray for you and send you some stuff to encourage you. So take a moment and mark your card as you think about your friendships, and just be deliberate, be intentional in these next few moments and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do this week to walk this out. One of the cool things we see with Peter, James, and John is that Peter and John later become leaders in the early church. And there's this little window we get into their lives where they go before the Sanhedrin, they go before kind of the religious and the community leaders, and we see this glimpse of the power in their lives because they had risked initiating a friendship with Jesus. In fact, here's what it says in Acts 4. It says, when they, meaning these community religious leaders, saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary fishermen, they were astonished and they took note that these men had been with Jesus. Man, I love that line right there. They took note these men had been with Jesus. Meaning, we can't explain the wisdom that this Peter and John, we can't explain the things that's happening out of their lives. I mean, these are like ordinary men. I mean, they're unschooled fishermen. They're like blue-collar guys. There's no letters behind their name. There's no university to attribute their wisdom to. All we can attribute it to is the fact that, man, these dudes were friends with Jesus. And you see, that there's something, there's a power that comes out of that friendship. There's a capacity that comes out of that kind of friendship. There's a resilience that comes out of that kind of friendship. And that wouldn't have been the case had they not dropped their nets and risked initiating friendship with Jesus, because that's what great friendships do. So I don't have any great pithy ending today, all right? But I want us to get after this week and just say, you know, where do I need to risk? Where do I need to take a risk in a friendship this week? So let's stand, and now we're going to sing together. We're going to sing about this, about risking the ocean, and just let God build into us as we go out into this week.